been a plan with God. We'll look up here and say God's plan of the ages. God has always had a plan. Things just didn't happen. Things happen in our lives, we think, but in God's economy, things are planned. Absolutely. Things are planned. Also, this is something else that you'll need. It's called the trail blood. The little chart in the back of it is very important. These are $5 a piece. They don't look like much, but the shipping kills you. Here's one for you. And you don't have one of these.
So is this the book we need to be bringing?
This is the book you need to be bringing, absolutely.
Okay, I have one at home, so.
Okay. We won't look at it a whole lot today. And then you need God's plan of the ages so you can look at this. You can go online and study these classes. You can study the classes that I did before. There are other classes that were not on video. That's the only bad thing. And the classes sometimes were 2.5 hours long because people didn't want to go home. My wife would go out there in the car after 2 hours and sit out there and honk the horn. It's enough. He'll be here next week, you know. But that was the way it was. People got so excited about the study of church history and the study of religion and the evolution of religion that they thought, well, we got all the answers right here now. We can do this, and maybe he won't be here next week, which I might not be, but whatever. This is exciting class. Look at all the people that are here for this. When I taught this at Valley Baptist Church, I taught it 5 times. The classroom was always filled. The first 2 or 3 classes, people would be so excited, and then we'd just see some of them fall out, and then others would bring others in. Now, you got to hear this. You got to hear this. You got to hear this. It'll make you understand about religion. You'll understand what religion. You'll understand the evolution of religion. You'll understand the parties of religion. You'll understand Calvinism versus Arminianism. And have you been listening to those the classes I've done on election? Mm-hmm. They're deeper than I've ever done before. Because we're really getting into it in depth this time. And your son really ought to enjoy those, I think. We will study all of those elements and the evolution of history. But before we can go into space and time as we are today and in 2017, in the year that we live, let's go back in eternity. Okay? Let's go back in eternity. Now, what is the oldest, absolutely oldest, verse in the Bible? What is it? John 1:1. Well, I'm going to see this is the Greek New Testament right here. See that? And it's all in Greek, not in English. All right? Now, I'm not doing this to show off, but I want to show you something here very beautiful that you should see no place else except in the Greek. Now, I've written this one all up just like I did all my other Bibles, as you see. And this is what Greek looks like a little bit. It looks a lot like English. You can pick out letters in it. Mm-hmm. See that? You know that? All right. Greek looks like English because English came from Greek. All Western languages originated in the Greek language. Many of the Greek words you will pick up in English because that's where they came from Greek. So let's look at this real quick. This is the oldest verse in the Bible. And let's see what it says. It says, let's say this with me, in. That sounds just like English, doesn't it? Because the English word preposition in came from the Greek. Isn't that nice? The first thing was, in arche, ein hologos, kai hologos, ein pros ton theon, kai Theos, ein hologos. In beginning. Now, I want you to say this now also. Let's go to Genesis, the first chapter. That was John, the first chapter. I can't read Hebrew upside down, so I've got to turn it over the right direction. It might look like it's upside down sometimes. All right. NRK and Barashith. Okay, Barashith. Tell me about Barashith, Brother Roger.
It's a a plural in one of the beginnings.
It's a plural word beginnings, okay? Bara sheath. Bara sheath. Bara sheath means in beginnings. Bath is a preposition on the front of that. Bath. Okay? It's a preposition in. Okay? Now, in beginnings is what it says there. And to interpret that correctly, it must mean in one of the beginnings. Now, in John 1 and 1, it says in beginning. It doesn't say in one of the beginnings, does it? Mm-hmm. So, in arche, and then it uses the Greek word ein. Ein. Ein is third person singular and perfect indicative active verb. Okay? A verb. A verb is an action thing. Third person singular, he. Imperfect, kept on, kept on being. He kept on being. It says, in beginning, he kept on being, and then it says the word hologos. Now, Brother Roger, what is the Greek equivalent, or the Hebrew equivalent to this?
Hadavar.
And that means the word. Okay, tell me, what is a Hebraism here, Christine?
The Hebraism...
What should be translated? What should be hologos? What actually is it represented?
He who shall become.
That's right, which is Jehovah.
Jehovah.
So now let's read this the way it should be translated with all the grammar and all the Hebraism. And then it says, in beginning, he kept on being the Jehovah. The word hologos there is Jehovah because it's talking about Hadavar. In the Old Testament, the word Jehovah was too holy to speak. Exodus. In the book of Exodus, it says, thou shalt not use the Lord thy God's name in vain, for he shall hold you responsible for it. So from that period of time on, Exodus 20 and verse 7, they never spoke the name of Jehovah again. We don't know how to say that word. We say Jehovah because King James said Jehovah. All right? But it's something like Yah. Yah. It is no vowels. You don't know how to say it. You can't pronounce it. They call it Yahweh today. But that's not even right, is it, Brother Roger? It's not there. Yahweh has vowels in it. The word Jehovah does not have any vowels in it. There is no way that we can pronounce that word, period. So the Jews would say Hadavar, the word. So now let's go back and look at what it says here. In beginning kept on being the Jehovah. And then it says Kai Hologos. And the Jehovah, he kept on being... Pros ton theon. Pros, that's a preposition, page 346 in Analytical Greek Lexicon. Pros ton theon. Now, ton theon there is accusative singular masculine. Definite article and noun, which is God. Mm-hmm. That word God there, how should we translate that one, Brother Ray, in Hebrew? This word God. Mm-hmm. Elohim. Elohim. Elohim means what?
The Godhead.
The Godhead. Now let's go back and look at it again. In beginning, he kept on being the Jehovah, and the Jehovah, he kept on being an inseparable part of the Godhead. Proston theon. Okay? And then it says Chi. Chi is normally a conjunction here, but it's like a because. We don't say and here. It's a because, and you can say, it says theos ein ho logos. Theos is Elohim. Because Elohim kept on being the Jehovah. Mm-hmm. The Jehovah kept on being Elohim. Now that's what you call a predicate nominative in language. Okay, I don't want to throw these big things over here. But if you got a Jehovah Witness that didn't believe that Jesus Christ was God the Son, this thing will totally destroy all of his theology. And it can't be moved. A predicate nominative means everything on this one side, this word Jehovah over here, and Hologos is God.
It's like an equal sign.
It's an equal sign, like mathematics. This one is this one. And on one side it's nominative singular masculine. On the other side it's nominative singular masculine. In other words, the subject on both sides of the verb. It's the same person. Now they say in the linear that the word was a God. Now there's no indefinite article in Greek. But since this is a predicate nominative, it could say here, Kai ho theos, ein ho logos. There's two definite articles there. The God and the Jehovah. are the same. Jesus is the God that created the universe. He is our creator. We are made in His triune image. We are body, we are spirit, we are soul. Okay? The part that we see of each other is the type, it's like the sun, because we see the physical manifestation of God in Jesus. That's all we're ever going to see. We're not going to see the Father. You want to see the Father? Jesus said what? Here I am. Look at me. Handle me. This is me. That's it. That's what it is. Now, we're studying theology too, aren't we, in church history? Okay? So we're studied who God is. Your creator is Jesus. Jesus, as he spoke to Abraham, as he walked in the garden with Adam, as we're going to see him in a little while, he was in his pre-incarnate form. Pre-incarnate. What does that mean? A-T-E means the act of. Pre means before. And then carne in Spanish is what?
Flesh.
Before he became flesh. Now, in the New Testament, where did God become flesh? Where did he become flesh? Quote it for me in Greek, young lady.
Oh. Kai logos sarx aganatos.
John 1:14. John 1:14 says, and the Jehovah sarx, carne, basar in Hebrew, flesh, he became, and that word he became there, aganato, is third person singular, first aorist, indicative middle voice. God brought himself from eternity into space and time in the person of Jesus Christ. So now we see the Creator God. And John in the first chapter and Colossians in the first chapter. Colossians was written by whom? Who wrote Colossians? Paul the Apostle.
Yeah.
You know that Paul the Apostle wrote John the first chapter again, right out of John the first chapter, to the Colossian church. What was the problem with the Colossian church? They were being infiltrated by what?
By
the Gnostics, which are the modern-day Jehovah's Witnesses. They didn't believe that Jesus was really flesh and blood, that God had become flesh. They didn't believe that he died on the cross of Calvary. These people don't believe that. Now, that does away with their salvation, doesn't it? We see this evolved. Where did it evolve from historically? Do you remember who one of the first people that taught this heresy? It was in Arabia.
Sadducees?
No. Who was the first person that taught that Jesus wasn't flesh and blood? You know who one of the first people were? In the New Testament, we have the Ephesian letter. We have the Colossian letter. We had John's Gospel right fighting against these Gnostics. But who was the famous Gnostic in about the 3rd century? Who was he? He was a teacher at that time in North Africa. And all of that, Muhammad was greatly influenced by his teaching later on. All right? Greatly influenced by his teaching later on.
Starts with an M.
All right? We'll get to it because what is it? Huh? Yeah, A.
Augustine?
What?
Not Augustine.
Okay. All right. We'll get to it. Let's go back. And the Word kept on being the God. Jehovah kept on being God. Genesis 1:1 now. Let's look at that. Now, we've already decided that Barashith is a plural word. Okay? It's a plural word. In beginnings... In one of the beginnings, in other words, we have to say that. In one of the beginnings, he had created. That's the word. It says, Barashith bara Elohim et ha-shamayim we et ha-arts. Okay? It said, in beginnings, he had created. That's the word bara. That's third person, masculine, singular, cal perfect. That's a completed action. Mm-hmm. If you get the Jewish Publication Society and read their translation of this, their interpretation of this, I'm not interpreting this. I'm telling you what it says. Okay? There's no interpretation. This is what it says. Is that right, Brother Roger?
Correct.
That's right. Third person, masculine, singular, cal, perfect, means he had created. That word created comes from the word bara. The word even barith, that word covenant, means to cut. But this here means to cut out, form, and fashion, and it means to finish. It's done. Now, the Jewish Publication Society, it says in the beginning, now there is no the beginning in here, is it? There's the beginning over here in John 1 and 1, but this is the absolute in time. In eternity past, John 1 and 1 goes back further than any other verse in the Bible. That's when only God existed, nothing else. Now it says over here, Barashith bara, in one of the beginnings, he had created Elohim et Hashemayim. And then it says here, et, that's a sign of direct object, and Hashemayim means what? Everything above the uplifted waters. The earth is like a ball. The Catholic Church said that the earth was flat. Muhammad teaches that there are seven flat earths. Seven of them. He wasn't satisfied with one flat earth. Well, in his time, the Catholic Church taught that. In his time, that the Gnostic heresy had gone all over Africa and down into Arabia. Where was one of the first trips that Muhammad ever made? As a businessman.
Down to
Damascus, Syria. Okay. Guess what? That's where Paul the Apostle got baptized. That was a Christian stronghold. But out among all of these things was also this heresy. This heresy.
So Genesis 1 and 1, that was the beginning of space and time and matter.
This is an eternity past. But here we have the beginning of matter.
That's what I'm saying. This is space, time,
God creates matter from himself, doesn't he? It doesn't come ex nihilo, as people say, but the earth and man and everything came from the person of God, and they're created from the same elements, so therefore we are created from the same elements as the earth is created from. Not from the earth, but like it. Mm-hmm. And Jesus, when he was born of a human mother that was related to the earth, and he became our kinsman redeemer, and he became the redeemer of the whole cosmos. Mm-hmm. Okay, Brother Ray.
The original creation and its destruction was done in eternity past.
Yes. We're not in time yet.
Not in time.
No, not in time yet.
Oh, we're not in
we're
time.
Not in time. We only have the creation of matter. But we're going to find out something was created before matter. Before this. We're going to find out something is created before this. Now man is created. It says, Eth Hashemayim. So God created Hashemayim, and that means everything above the uplifted waters. The earth wasn't created yet. We have the universe created, but no earth yet. Mm-hmm. God creates the order, and he does not create disorder. And the Jewish Publication Society, in the beginning, God began to create. It doesn't say that. It says, in one of the beginnings, he had created Elohim, the universe, the Hashemayim, the heavens. And then it said, we et ha'aretz. And then he took the earth and placed it exactly in the right place in that universe to sustain life. Because through that little planet, he is going to redeem the whole universe back to himself. That's the plan. Okay? That is the plan. How soon do you guys have to leave today? Is there a time? No?
No.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Now let's go to Genesis 1 and 2. Genesis 1 and 2. It says, We ha'aretz, hathia tohu wavohu. We hoshik el panei tohom. We ruah Elohim. Meripacheth el panei hamayim. Now, it says, And the earth, we ha'aretz. We, on the front of that, is a conjunction. Page 253 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs. Ha, that is a definite article. And the earth. And the earth, the Eretz. That little planet that he placed so many planets away from the sun to be in exactly the right place, have exactly the right gravity, exactly the right atmosphere. And by the way, at this time, the earth was... In the original earth, It had lands all over it and oceans and everything. And there was an ocean of water around the earth. And we're going to see God reconstruct that again. Okay? It says, and the earth she had become. Third person feminine singular, cow perfect. Am I telling the truth, Brother Roger? Mm-hmm. All right. See, he knows it. The earth she had become, tohu wavohu. Tohu means just absolute desolation and destruction. Absolute desolation and destruction. And waste. And then it says, and wehoshek, and darkness upon the faces of the deep, of the abyss, of the tahom. And then it says, weruah, and then it says, spirit. Now, in the Jewish Publication Society's interpretation of this, it says, and a wind from God went over the deep, over the waters. But the Bible says, and spirit God. Spirit God. Spirit. The word ruah, and in the New Testament, it's pneuma. Okay? This means, it means wind. It means breath, because you usually can't see it. You get out here early in the morning sometimes when it's cold, and you can see your breath coming out. You can see, you don't see your breath, but you see what it does, how it changes into a mist because of the cold. All right, Spirit God. And this is really something. A mother really loves their children, don't they? They love their children. They love those children. These children came from their bodies, and they love them, and this is part of them, and they just love that child. And when something happens to that child, it hurts them. This ties their guts up when they see them get hurt. It's really bad. Now, God created the heavens and the earth, didn't he? And then it says here, it uses a feminine form. Now, God is not a female, but sometimes we have that attribute of God that like a mother. El Shaddai. El Shaddai means what? It means all powerful. But what it means is all nourishing, because it's talking about breast of the woman. Shad is breast. The all nourishing God. And that's feminine. Breast. Okay. And now we have the word Meripasheth. And this word here, it means it's feminine participle. She kept on suffering over. She kept on suffering over the destruction of the earth. Now, what did God create before he created anything material like earth?
Angels.
And I want, what?
Angels.
Angels. Now, let's go back to the book of Job. Let's go to the book of Job. Job, the 38th chapter. Now, in the New Testament, in your red letter Bibles, when Jesus is talking in the four Gospels, we have four Gospels. Tell me about the four Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are what? Called what? Synoptics. That means they look at things together. And then we have old John. John wrote his Gospel, the last of all, and he wrote it for one purpose, not to be anything like the other Gospels. Totally different. He wanted to prove that Jesus Christ is God. Jehovah God. And he did that in 1st, 2nd, 3rd John. He was fighting Gnosticism. And he did it in the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation is full of Hebraisms. In the 19th chapter of the book of Revelation, it talks about Adonai HaAdonaiim of the Old Testament. What is that? Adonai HaAdonaiim. The King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And it quotes all through the Old Testament of who Jehovah, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, is. And then in the 19th chapter of Revelation, we see him coming on a horse. And on his thigh is written, Adonai HaAdonaiim, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And it's relating Jesus to Adonai HaAdonaiim of the whole Old Testament. Jehovah Adonai HaAdonaiim. Mm-hmm. Jehovah the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And there's what's going to take over the universe. That's Revelation 19th chapter. Well, let's go back here now. God is speaking here in the book of Job. Not all the book of Job. Well, the book of Job is inspired, all right. But not all the book of Job you can use to preach from. Is that right, Brother Ray?
Absolutely.
Don't preach from when his friends start talking. That's not inspired from God, okay? But right here in the 38th chapter, we have God speaking. You can put this in red letters, okay? This is red letters. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who's talking to Job here, by the way? It's Jesus.
Yeah.
That's Jehovah in his pre-incarnate form. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now gird up your loins like a man. I start acting like a man. Job was really depressed. He was having all kinds of trouble. His friends were all against him. He had nothing but trouble. He had lost everything he had, and he was beginning to say, I need a lawyer between me and God, because I haven't done nothing wrong. And all this happened to me. Why, God? And his friends kept telling him, you're a bad man, you're a sinner and everything. Job said, I'm not a sinner. I'm a sinner, but I'm not a sinner. I'm not doing anything wrong. Why is all this happening to me? And God says, I'm doing it for Carrie and Christina and for Caleb and for Brother A and Marilyn and Roger. I'm doing this for them today, so they can see what's out there in this world, in this cosmos, what's going on. Now, before God ever created the material universe and Genesis 1 and 1, he created spirits and angels. And spirits and angels are two different entities. What's the difference between spirits and angels, Brother Roger?
Spirits don't have form, angels do.
Spirits are not clothed. They don't have form. Angels have a body. Okay? They have a body. Now, that body can go between 10 dimensions. They can materialize here and there and wherever. And sometimes mankind see them. And they're created in the image of God also, in his triune image. Okay? But they weren't created in his sovereign image, like man was, in the same way. Now, yes, they are sovereign, aren't they? Can angels go bad? Yeah, we know that one third of them did. But can they be redeemed after they go bad? Was Adam redeemed after he went bad? Yeah. Because God had provided for it. And we're going to see that in Genesis 3rd chapter. Let's go see what happened here. Now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me, God is telling. This is God is talking to Job. Now, Job, boy, he was really a miserable person. He was doing everything right. God had blessed him greatly. And then God allowed Satan to mess with him. Does Satan ever mess with you? Yeah. He's there. The book of Job is written to tell you that he's there. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the ha'aretz, of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who set its measurements, since you know, or her measurements actually? Or who stretched out a line on it? And what were its bases sunk? And who laid its cornerstone? And what happened when this all took place? When the morning stars sang together and the sons of God shouted for joy. Who's that?
The angels.
Angels. The angels. Was Lucifer there?
Mm-hmm.
What's the modern name for Lucifer?
Satan.
What's the modern name for Lucifer?
Luke.
Luke. Everybody name Luke. We have Luke in the New Testament. Okay. Luke means the light carrier. Lucifer means light carrier. When God created Lucifer, he was full of beauty, wasn't he? We're going to look at that in Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28. We're going to look at how beautiful he was. But he was a sovereign being also. But he, once he made a choice, it was fastened and fixed forever. For 1,000 years, God is going to, after this tribulation period, for 1,000 years, Satan is going to be in a bottomless pit. And when he turns him loose out on the earth, he hasn't repented one bit, has he? Hadn't changed his mind. He's still got one purpose, and that's to damage you and to usurp God. It says, when the morning stars sang together, what is the purpose of angels?
Minister to, well, that's minister. Spirit.
They're ministers.
Yeah, and messengers.
Angelos. They're messengers. Angelos means angel. We get our word angel from angelos. Melech is the word in Hebrew. The morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Now, all of these angels are called sons of God because God beget them. When we beget children in this world, they don't always go right. Sometimes they go wrong. And these are God's children. Some of these, one-third of these children went wrong. The angels have form. The spirits don't. Now, fallen spirits, fallen angels are called fallen angels, aren't they? Or demonic angels. That's actually a wrong term. And fallen spirits are called demons. And demons are what? What are they, Brother Roger?
Little gods.
Little gods, because they are supernatural. They are supernatural. Demon means little gods. Little gods, because they're supernatural. They are eternal from the time they were created. They never die. I might say this and just let you just think about this one for a while. How many of you ever seen Bigfoot theories? Heard about the Bigfoot thing? Well, I saw one. It scared me completely to death. I never believed in one. Now, there are many giants in the Bible. Those giants are called Nephilim. And these Nephilim are crossbreeds between angels and women. As far as I know, it takes supernatural power to kill them, their bodies. When David went out against Goliath, he went out against five giant Nephilim. There were five of them. How many stones did he take?
Five.
Five stones. He's going to kill them all with hubris, supernatural power. He killed one called Goliath and cut his head off. Did he not? Mm-hmm. He killed one called Goliath. And then everybody scattered, and then they had to go try to kill the other ones. Now, one of those giants almost killed David, and they would never let him go to war again. These things take supernatural power to kill. They've never found a Bigfoot, have they? For whatever reason. Maybe they don't die. I know they exist. I saw one. Saw one up there and just terrorized me. I mean, I was just... I knew when I saw the thing that I was in something. I was in the presence of some supernatural being. It was not normal. It was paranormal. It was not normal. And I was terrified of it. I had a .44 Magnum sitting on my seat. And a spotlight right there. I'd been shooting coyotes and rattlesnakes and things like that. And I'm a good shot. But I didn't feel like I had anything. I was unarmed with this thing. It was so powerful. It just zapped me with this terror. My son didn't understand me because he saw me killing wild hogs with a .22 pistol. And think, Dad, you got a .44 Magnum sitting there loaded. I said, it's not enough. This is like Goliath. This thing is different. Well, here we have they're called the sons of God. The Old Testament, angels called sons of God. In the New Testament, mankind that are saved are called sons of God. And those sons of God back here minister to us, the ones that are ministering angels. We believe that there are three orders of angels, the material realm, the spiritual realm, and the mental realm, intellectual realm. Gabriel's over the intellectual realm. Lucifer was over the physical realm or material realm, and Michael is over the spiritual realm. Some of the strongest angels are in Michael's group. Mm-hmm. And they have form. If you ever see a ghost, there are no ghosts, by the way, but if you see a ghost, something representing a ghost, it is a fallen angel. What we call poltergeists, we hear noises and things like that. If we've got communications from the other world, like they in these seances, those are not your grandpas and grandpas and uncles and aunts and brothers and sisters and whatever coming back. Those are demon spirits representing and acting like they are them. Okay? They are not them. There are no such thing as ghosts. But there are real spirits that wander. Real spirits that wander. That's a reality. But they will imitate people. They will imitate people. And people will be fooled. The government forces use paranormal people that say they have these powers to tell them where this is found. Even the police departments and the sheriff's department use paranormal activity to find things. This paranormal activity is not on the good side. It's in the evil side. All of these people that you see in there as they're looking for your horoscopes and all this kind of things that they do all the time in the newspapers and in books. This is from the dark side. The dark side. If you read the book of Enoch, you will find out about these angels. He will name the angels in Genesis, the 6th chapter, that cohabited with women, and how, what sins they brought into the human race because of that. So now we have the oldest verse in the Bible, which is what? John 1 and 1. And we have God there before anything else was. Then we have the beginning of the universe and the earth, still in eternity past. Okay? We're still in eternity. We haven't come into space and time yet. We haven't done that yet. All right? So now let's go on a little bit further. I can find my notes here. To Isaiah 14. Isaiah 14. Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 14. We're talking about something that took place in eternity past. Here. Isaiah 14 and verse number 12. Talking about the king of Tyre and Babylon in these different chapters. We have Babylon is going to fall. But we're talking, this is what we call a dual prophecy. A dual prophecy. It's double prophecy, two ways. That Babylon was going to fall and that something happened in the past. Now, we're going to find out where Lucifer got his name in the English language, Lucifer. Because it's in this verse right here, but it didn't come from the Hebrew. It came from the Latin Vulgate with Jerome. How are you fallen from heaven, Hillel? Say Hillel.
Hillel.
Hillel. That's the word for Lucifer. That's Lucifer's name. That's what God called him. Hillel means light carrier. And when Jerome translated the Latin Vulgate, he called him, it comes from the Latin word lucere, which means to shine, so he called him Lucifer. Oh, Lucifer, son of the dawn. Now, what was Lucifer's job, Brother Ray? Do you remember? What was Lucifer's job? He was over the physical realm of God. Now, I don't believe all of his angels that were in his realm fell, because if you got a guardian angel, it came from his realm. And one third of those angels fell, but two thirds are still being guardian angels and over the material universe. Some of the most dangerous angels that fell with Lucifer was from Michael's realm, and they had to be put in bottomless pit because they were too dangerous to turn loose. Now the Lord, in the tribulation period, is going to turn some of them loose on the earth. These people deserve it. It's bad. They're bad. They're bad dudes, okay? He said, how are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? You have been cut down to the earth. You have weakened the nations. What kind of nations? What nations did he weaken? The angelic nations. He took a third of the spiritual forces, which are the spirit world. Now, spirits are not clothed. They don't have form, but they have power and they have influence. What caused Muhammad, what caused him to see the visions that he did?
He had convulsions.
And they even considered, he thought in the very beginning that he was demon-possessed, which he was. He was demon-possessed. Charles Taze Russell, which has started the Jehovah Witness group that has propagated the destruction of the person Jehovah that they say they're Jehovah Witnesses of. Jehovah is the person they say didn't become flesh. Jehovah. And then we have Mormonism. How did Joseph Smith get all of these revelations, supposedly?
An angel of light.
from the angel of light. If you let Muhammad tell you what the person that appeared to him, he said it was Gabriel. But if he describes that, he's describing Lucifer, not Gabriel. He's describing Lucifer. Lucifer came to him. They have killed 270 million people in the world with that religion. Catholicism killed between 50 and 100 million in their rampage. Now, these religions are rough religions. They're very violent religions. Violent religions. Because Satan is a violent being, isn't he? By what you said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven, and I will raise my throne above the stars of God, above all the angels of God, those that remain with God. I will become more powerful than they are. And I will set in the mount of the assembly. The word mount there means the government of the assembly of all of these angels. And I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, and I will make myself like the Most High. Now, we know the king of Babylon didn't do this, did he? But who did it?
Lucifer.
Nevertheless, you'll be thrust down to Sheol. Sheol, now the Jehovah's Witness, the way they will do away with hell and Hades. Because they say Sheol is just the grave. Sheol is a place of departed spirit, the place asked about. The grave is called Queaver. That's something you dig. You can dig a grave. You can carve a cave out and in a side of a hill or something, and you can make a monument to somebody that died and bury them there. But you cannot dig a Sheol. Mm-hmm. Sheol is a place of departed spirits. That is a realm of departed spirits. We'll get into that a little later. To the recesses of the pit, those who see you gaze at you, and they will ponder over you, saying, is this the man who made the earth to tremble? Was the earth destroyed in Genesis 1 and 2? Mm-hmm. Yeah. She became formless and void. Who shook the kingdoms? Who made the world like a wilderness? Who overthrew its cities and did not allow his prisoners to go home? That's the ones that followed him. Now let's go to Ezekiel 28. This is, let's see the rest of it. Ezekiel 28. Are you learning something? Mm-hmm. Talking about the king of Tyre, but it's really not talking about the king of Tyre in these verses 11 on. Verse number 11 on. And again the word of Jehovah came to me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation over the king of Tyre, and say to him, Thus saith the Lord God, Jehovah Elohim, you had the seal of perfection. Did God create anything imperfect?
No.
Was Lucifer perfect when God created it. Mm-hmm. It says right here he is. You had the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Was the king of Tyre in Eden, the garden of God?
Mm-hmm.
Who was?
Mm-hmm.
How many Edens are there in the Bible?
Three.
Two. Mm-hmm. One of them where Lucifer was, and it was the throne room.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one where Adam was, which was the throne room. Okay? You were in Eden, the garden of God, and every precious stone was your covering. Now read Muhammad's description of Gabriel. And it will be this description right here. The ruby, the topaz, and the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, and the jasper, the lapis, the lazuli, the turquoise, and the emerald, the gold, and the workmanship of her settings and sockets was in you on the day that you were created. And that's exactly how he describes Gabriel, the one he saw. They were prepared, and you were the anointed cherub. There are seraphim and cherubim, and the angels, aren't they? And they're archangels, seraphim and cherubim. And we know that Lucifer is a cherubim, don't we? Mm-hmm. What is a cherubim? You remember that, Carrie? What's a cherubim? What's different with a cherubim than anything else? How about Brother A? What's cherubim? Cherubim. What? Yeah, brother Roger.
They have wings.
They have wings. Cherubim have wings. Lucifer has wings. He's a cherubim.
Mm-hmm.
A cherubim. You were anointed. They picked one out. You were the chosen one. The cherub who covers. Who literally watched over. And was the administrator of the material creation of God. And not only was he administrator over the material creation of God, but he led out in worship. He was a song leader. Angels sang. Angels sing. Beautiful music, I guess. Paul heard that, did he not? John saw it. You were the anointed cherub who covers and placed you there, and you were on the holy government of God. You walked in midst of stones of fire. That's right in the throne of God. The throne of God. What do you know what the throne of God has underneath? Young lady, you ever read the book of Revelations and read about the throne of God? What's underneath the throne of God? You know? What is it?
Diamond.
It's diamond. It's a polished diamond floor. Mm-hmm. And diamond does what? It reflects beauty. And this is a perfect diamond, by the way. It reflects tremendous beauty. This rainbow's a beauty. That rainbow throne is reflected by that diamond floor. All right? You walked in the midst of the stones of fire, and you were blameless in your ways. He was created blameless, wasn't he? From the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. By the abundance of your trade, you were internally filled with violence, and you sinned. Therefore, I've cast you as profane from the government of God. I have destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire, and your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom by reason of splendor. I cast you to the ground. I put you before kings that they may see you. Archangels are what? King angels. Arch means king. Arche, N-R-K, ain't whole logos. In beginning, that means head or beginning. It's Rosh in Hebrew. Barashit, the root of that word is Rosh. That means head. I'll set you before kings that they may see you. By the multitude of your iniquities and in unrighteousness of your trade, you profaned your sanctuaries. Therefore, I brought fire from the midst of you, and it has consumed you. And it will. He's going to make the lake of fire. He's going to be a permanent resident in the lake of fire one of these days. All who knew you among the peoples are appalled at you. You have become terrified, and you will be no more. In the book of 2 Corinthians, it says that God will even be glorified in hell. Did you know that? He'll be glorified in heaven and glorified in hell.
Where does it say that?
God will be glorified in heaven, and he will be glorified in heaven and hell. What he does in hell will be pure righteous. It will be pure just judgment. There are many different, in hell, there are many places, degrees of hell. And in heaven, there are many degrees of heaven. And those that are in hell, nobody will go to hell because of sin, because of rejecting Jesus Christ. No person. Because Jesus Christ's blood covers all man's sins. It is only efficacious to those that repent and call upon him. But it's sufficient to cover every man that was ever born. No man will ever go to hell because of sin, but because of rejection of Jesus Christ. You have any questions thus far? Any questions? Have you learned something today?
I have. Okay, so I know, so angels, I understand that angels, like, we were created in God's image, so, mm-hmm. And angels were created in God's image to a certain extent.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we have, at the time of our death, that's when the last time is that we can repent and
yes.
make a difference. And so somewhere in eternity past, when God gave the angels their choice, and a third chose to follow Satan, and
yes.
two-thirds, you know, stayed and was with the Lord,
mm-hmm.
that was kind of like, I know they didn't die, but that was kind of like their death. Like,
they died.
That sealed their fate.
Yeah, they died at that moment.
Okay.
They began to taste death, the second death.
Right.
Okay.
And that sealed it for their choice forever, just like it seals ours.
Yes.
So once I accept Jesus Christ, I'm sealed.
Forever.
Forever. And if I haven't accepted Christ, and then when my death happens,
you're sealed forever.
I'm sealed. Okay.
You're sealed either way. When you there's Arminianism and Calvinism. Arminianism always says that God initiated your salvation, but you have to keep it and do things to keep up your salvation. That's Arminian theology. Okay, Jacob is Arminius. Then we have John Calvin. That's what is like the father of Calvinism, actually, but Baptists taught that before Calvin, 1,500 years before he was born. It's always been, if you are really saved, you are saved forever. And let me explain that. You're a triune. You have body, you have soul, and you have spirit. Now, when you're born in this earth, into this world, you're born into this world by the blood of your father, not the mother. Did you know that not one drop of your blood came from your mother? Not one drop? Nothing. Not blood. No blood from your mother. Mm-hmm. The blood comes of the Father. And that blood is where the infection of sin is in. In one blood are all mankind created from Adam. And that infection, when Adam sinned, that's what causes us to sin. Now, when we come to the age of accountability and we become our own, when we become our own, the blood of Jesus Christ covers us when we're young, or if somebody that's not mentally enough to understand, okay? He covers all men, especially those that believe, it says. I could go to many. I've done sermons. You've heard me preach sermons on this, security of the of little children. But when we become our own, we have a spirit of rebellion in us. So that came from our father, which came from that infection from the Genesis, the third chapter, which we'll look at too. That's in us. Jesus did not have any blood from his so-called earthly father, so he had no sin in him, did he? Mm-hmm. If a child could be born without the agents of a father, the child would be eternal and sinless child, which Jesus was. And here we have evidence for the virgin birth of Jesus. Okay? He had a virgin birth. God was his. Jesus brought himself into the world. The seed that was in him, the blood that was in Jesus, was divine blood. Sinless blood. The same blood that was originally in Adam. But he infected that blood with rebellion. Now we're stuck with it, but Jesus was not. But Jesus, we bring children into this world. We bring them into the world alive, don't we? We don't want them to die, and sometimes they die when they're young and whatever else, and that's a terrible thing. But we don't birth our children to die. God birthed his son to die for you. He was born to die, and he didn't have to die. He didn't have to die. Again, 2 Corinthians says that also. He was born to die for us that didn't have to die. Mm-hmm. When we're born again, that spirit of rebellion is actually moved out of us, and the Spirit of God comes in us. That's the indwelling of the Spirit of God, the indwelling of the Spirit of God in a person. That's what marks you, brands you, earmarks you for the resurrection. And once it's there, it cannot go away. Ephesians 1st chapter says it's the down payment. And the down payment there is earnest money, and it means unrefundable. God will not take it back. And that's the absolute eternal security of the real believer. A lot of people will go forward today and make professions in churches that never repented of their sins and everything. They just went along. I had a woman call me all the way, 30-something. She was almost 40 years old, called me from Texas. And her pastor told her she was all right. Her husband told her she was all right. And she just felt like she's lost. And she listened to me preach on the internet. And she said, I know you can answer my questions. And she said, I don't think I'm saved. I think I've been rejecting the gospel all my life and everything. And I said, why do you think that? Because I just feel terrible. I hear the preaching of God's word and I just feel terrible. I've been a Sunday school teacher. I made a profession of faith in some bad vacation Bible school when I was a little kid. But I just don't know God. I don't feel like I know God. And I told her, she said, my husband says I'm a wonderful Christian woman. My pastor does, and they say I'm okay. And I said, have you ever asked the Lord to forgive you your sins? She said, no. Do you believe that he is God the Son and all this, you know, Jesus? Yeah, I believe all that. Have you ever asked him to forgive your sins and save your soul? And she said, no. I said, well, you're in trouble. You're lost. So we prayed on the phone, and she asked the Lord to forgive her of her sins. And she then, from that on, she had life in her. You can be religious and not know the Lord. Sometimes it's easy believism that we live in today is very dangerous sometimes. Have you come to a point in your life that you really asked the Lord to forgive your sins and save your soul? Was there a time? If it was, then the Spirit of God is in you forever and will never leave you. Period. Do you have any questions before I turn you loose on the world? Any questions? Any? Udamia? None? No more?
I'm sure there will be.
All right. Carrie? A young lady, you're Christina?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a question?
Not really.
Okay.
She will.
All right. Anything? Joshua? Caleb? Raymond? Roger? Mary Lynn? All right.
If you could clarify more about the blood of the Father.
Oh, the blood of the Father is what meets the sperm. In an egg, it's the blood of the rooster that forms that and gives it life. Okay? In the human race, there is a book, you can read a whole book about it, called Chemistry of the Blood by Dr. M.R. Dehan. If you want to read that, it'll explain that to the crossing of the T and the dotting of the I. The blood comes from the Father, and that's how we get our Adamic nature.
That's why DNA testing can be proven.
Yeah.
That's where DNA testing comes from. Like when they try to find out who their father is, They can do blood tests.
Okay. All right, the blood test. Yeah. It's come to the blood test. You can take a piece of your skin or something or inside your mouth and put it in there. That basically is going to chase it back on the mother's side. The blood goes to the father's side. Mm-hmm. Now, you can see those things, those DNA mixed up in there, in that, but the blood is from the Father. That M.R. Dehan did a really wonderful, and he's a doctor. He's telling you that isn't it beautiful that medical science and geology and archaeology and everything go along with the Bible?
No.
Huh? It's beautiful. Creation versus evolution that I teach tomorrow. This is all what it's about. Creation versus evolution. The Bible versus all of this evolution and everything. It takes more faith to believe in evolution than it does to believe in the Bible and creation. And I'll tell you this one thing. Right now you found out today the earth is not 6,000 years old. As the new earth people, young earth people, the earth is old. It was created in eternity past, not in space and time. We haven't got there yet. God restored that earth in space and time when we see that and put man on it. All right? Man was created then, and we have time. How long ago was that? According to which chronology you study, from anywhere from 6 to 15, 20,000 years old. According to the Septuagint, when was Jesus born? And what millennium? According to Septuagint, that's the Old Testament. Translation from Greek, from Hebrew to Greek. According to them and those scholars and theologians back then, when was Jesus? What millennia was he born in? You remember, Brother Roger?
No.
In the seventh millennium, the beginning of the 7,000 years. Mm-hmm. That's 2,000 years. That would be at least 9,000 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So just, I want you to think. Think. We go to church many times, we leave our head outside, and we just follow along with whatever they say. It is gospel, but is it gospel? Is it gospel? Start studying these things. You're going to learn a lot of stuff in here. Did you learn something today?
Mm-hmm. That's why time is warped in space.
Yeah. We don't know how old the earth is.
Space and matter were created before time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Before.
That's why time is warped inside space.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I just got it.
Yeah.
I love it when I do that.
Yeah, Brother Ray, you get that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anything, Brother Roger, you got anything to say? Did I preach the truth today?
Yes. So who was that Gnostic that starts with the name?
Yes, who was that?
Arius of Alexandria.
Okay.
Arius.
Oh,
see? I wanted you to think of this. Arius of Alexandria. It was an A. Arius of Alexandria. Thank you for bringing it back up because I forgot to say it. I wanted you to think. It bothered you. Arius of Alexandria. All right, I wanted you to think about it. That gives you something to think about. I'll do that occasionally, don't I, brother? Arius of Alexandria, look at him. That is the father of modern-day Jehovah's Witnesses. All right. You ready to go out there? Let's have a prayer. Go out and sick him. Do something eternal. Peyton, it's good to have you here today. You want to dismiss us in prayer?
Yes, I will.
Okay.